the Around the NFL podcast. Wishes they were Barbara Sessler.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast.
Is that mom's name?
Where did that come from?
It is her name. She also listens to the show somewhat religiously, so that's going to probably throw her for a loop, as it did us and me.
Define somewhat religiously, like lapsed or
I don't want to commit her to it, but I think she listens to it a lot, like almost every show.
Dan Hansis, and I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
I mean, that absolutely threw me for a loop because, Ricky, with the money drops, we basically crowdsource it.
Yes.
So does that mean some stranger on Twitter?
Yeah. but wait, you guys just forgot. There was one episode like last month where Mark was like, "If I was a girl, if I was Barbara Sessler," and people didn't know that was your mom. It was like it sounded like you just came up with if you were a female, you would be Barbara Sessler. Hmm. So it's like a callback to your own joke that you guys don't remember.
Not a lot of Barbaras being born today being named Barbara. It's not a hot, I wouldn't call it a hot, flaming hot name at the moment.
Feels like it peaked in the 50s and 60s.
Mm. Well, grandmother was Barbara.
Not calling it peaked, but, you know.
I don't know if I've ever met a Barbara that's under the age of 40, honestly.
I feel like it was removed as an option. I don't know why.
Babs.
I have a neighbor.
Good nickname.
Sort of like how Gary's going to be for men in the next.
Yeah, any Barbaras I can think of were, you know, on television or movies and a while ago.
You know what? I say bring back Barbara. I think it's a very nice.
It'll come back.
Babs.
They all come back eventually.
Actually, my neighbor is a woman named Barbara. She's about 70, 75 years old. She's lived in the same house since she was a girl. So she's been on my block, and she's also the kind of cliche older lady that's always looking out the window and knows everybody's business. So she's a great resource. So I always keep in touch with Babs. I call her Babs, and the first time I said it to her, she went, "Oh my, no one has called me that in many, many years."
Why does it not surprise me that you have already enlisted a spy for your neighbor?
Seriously.
The name Barbara was the number two ranked name in the 30s and had an amazing run where it stayed in the top 10 until 1960, now not even in the top 900.
There you go.
Yeah. Wow. It's a versatile name, but I guess that's not valued anymore.
Taking a dirt nap.
Save it for the Babs podcast.
Mm. All right. Welcome to the Thursday edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We have a very nice show for you, and I love any episode where we can interface with the listeners. That sounded a little clinical.
It did.
But how about just communicate? That's a little warmer.
Share something together.
Share something together. So the mailbag makes its return, and a nice job. Got some good queries this time around. So we'll do that a little later. Also, Greg, you are you seem to be in good spirits and awake, but you've been up for a long time apparently, and it ties into our segment. What we're getting up early for. Mm. What did you get up early for?
Well, I had there was some French Open action that I was excited to watch, and I got up around 5:15 a.m., a little later than I meant to, but, you know, caught, you know, the match I won.
What is this?
The Trope Alert? It got me thinking sort of about Wes's passion for the Reds right now is inspiring. That's the other thing. Like, he gets home from a night out, maybe he's had a couple drinks or whatever. He knows the final score, or he doesn't. He gets home at 11 p.m. He watches the entire Reds game until 2 in the morning. That is a level of devotion. It's almost inspiring, but I feel that way about some of
it. It's a madness. I watch these games so I can have the film at my disposal, so in my mind, I can make future moves that will make the Reds better, even though I have no power to make any moves for the Reds.
And so, you know, I do that for big Kane Ishikori matches, you know, in the Grand Slam. What are the football things that are getting you up in the morning? It's been our job for a while here, but what still gets those juices flowing like a little kid?
Now, I know you're a Red Sox fan, so you hate the Yankees, but do I inspire you that I watch like 150 Yankee games? Or is it only because Wes?
I know the answer to that question.
And he's he likes
No, that's fair. Your fandom of the Yankees has been tried and true and consistent. I was just kind of blown.
The Yankees are easy to root for. The Reds are hard.
I was just kind of blown away. When he gets home, and he knows the score, and then he starts at the beginning and then watches anyway. And the other day I texted him about like a game-winning home run, and he didn't respond for 2 hours later because he was avoiding texts and watching the game starting from the first inning. And, you know, it's like, this is madness.
I agree. It is madness.
Six games under 500 in May.
Enjoy this before the next two Mays come around.
This is how I know you're not a real Reds fan, Greg, because anyone with a pulse on the Reds know that they are ascending and they will make the playoffs.
You are an incredible diehard Yankees fan, though. You watch every single game,
right now.
Well, had a successful a blog as well for years that you could still find.
It was marginally successful, yes. River and Sunset.
You had it on in the house before the wedding. You were in your tux.
And you were watching it at the house. Love the national pastime. It's well known.
I'm vaguely
I had a baseball blog, too, back in the day.
Well,
on Blogs,
that is a B storyline.
We all were baseball writers?
Dan's was quite a thing. You're the tennis guy.
I was unemployed.
Stick with tennis.
I didn't even like watching tennis.
I thought you played tennis this morning, and now I found out that you simply probably rolled over in your bed and watched it on your phone or something.
I mean, I had to go out to the main room, make some coffee, but it wasn't that impressive.
All right, so what gets us up early in the morning for football? Let's start with some news.
Speaking of Ludacris, my favorite song, Roll Out by Ludacris. And tune in tomorrow. Maybe I'll sing it. Who knows?
Charlie Casserly on NFL Network. Now, question. Did someone get in Charlie's ear and mention Ludacris? Or does Charlie Casserly, the former general manager, of course, of both the Washington Redskins and the Houston Texans, he's been on our show, an older gentleman, great guy, Charlie. Does he actually know?
Totally organic.
Ludacris?
Totally organic.
Based on his Instagram feed, I think a lot of people might underestimate what Charlie knows about many things.
Well, he's got a daughter, and that's a song that like plays at sporting events. I have a feeling that's a real thing that he knows that song.
Wow. All right.
I don't think he has a CD.
We could have mined that topic a little from another angle as well, which is it does feel like producer fed, but I think we all believe that Charlie's versatile.
I actually know the answer. I'll tell you guys privately.
Oh, no.
All right. Let's get into the news start with why would it be so disappointing to you?
Well, just what a bad take I had. You know, what a disastrous way to start the show.
Chris Harris and the Broncos have gotten a deal done. The cornerback, who was unhappy with his contract status, reached an agreement with the Denver Broncos to adjust his salary for 2019. He'll now be paid just a shade over $12 million, James Palmer reported Tuesday evening. Mike Kliss of 9 News first reported it, and the team later confirmed it. So Chris Harris in the building. This is a four-time Pro Bowl player, a one-time All-Pro selection. He turns 30 on June 18th, and that's a tricky number for a number one cornerback. But Wes, this is a move that keeps the Broncos in a good place defensively. There was talk that he could be trade bait around the draft. This is a much better outcome for this organization.
Yeah, it feels like all sides win here. He's going to be 30 years old. Like you said, four-time Pro Bowler, still one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. Their secondary sort of fell apart down the stretch when he was injured. And it still seems to me like this was all about making sure he gets as much or more than Kareem Jackson gets this year.
That's a great point. And it's doing right by a guy who's been one of the better bargains in the league for a while. It's a couple times lately that a team just decided to do right by a guy they didn't have to. The Patriots, Edelman, this with Harris. You don't want that employee coming in who's really not as good as you making more money. Can cause a lot of problems.
I mean, like, not every cornerback is the same, so him turning 30 is different than some others turning 30 where they're about to fall off a cliff. But I don't have a problem with Elway doing this and assessing a year from now if they want to get into the free agent derby to keep him around post-30.
This is a very much a win-now defense in Denver. And that secondary group with Kareem Jackson, who's 31, and Harris, who's turning 30, you got to make hay. This is a big year for your team, Wes.
It's not my team. I was just thinking that, like, you called it a win-now defense. I think most people would consider this a win-never offense.
I don't know. That's your guy, Joe Flacco.
I said most people. I believe in Joe Flacco. But It is.
Flacco, we'll find out.
It is sort of 50-50 to me whether this offense is any good.
If the Colts and Broncos play, who are you going to root for? Those are clearly the two West
Colts,
teams
clearly.
In 2018.
The Broncos are not one of my teams.
I don't know.
No, we're a little bit
back to yourself in the corner.
It's more and Wes is right. What he's saying is truthful. He's invested in Joe Flacco being successful this year. And that we could misconstrue that as saying he's a Broncos fan. But what all Wes needs is for Joe Flacco to be a top 15 quarterback, and he's the winner. He doesn't need the Broncos to win 10 games.
Mm. I like how you boiled this down to winning and losing on my end, because this might come back.
Their season's mostly about you at this point. the Denver populace doesn't know this.
Let's move on to the Los Angeles Rams and Todd Gurley. It's a topic of intrigue in the NFL. Gurley dealing with a knee condition that disconcertingly could be a long-term issue, not something that he could just show up in camp and be back to old Todd Gurley. So we'll see how it all plays out. For now, the Rams have a quote, according to ESPN, specific individualized offseason plan for Gurley, and it does not include the star running back appearing in any team drills at OTAs. Here's what Sean McVay had to say. That was what we felt like was the best for Todd when Todd and I sat down, and it's been really good so far, and we feel good about it. Mark, do you read into this at all?
I don't know why they'd have him out there doing much more than nothing, because I think there is something going on with Todd Gurley that they have been a little strange about from the start. It's on my radar. I really think that the drafting of Daryl Henderson, who I think is a role player for them, but someone that Les Snead said gave the Rams an Alvin Kamara skill set that they wanted to use, that he could have a big role. I think it's just they've been kind of telling us, whether we want to hear it or not, for a long time, that Todd Gurley is not going to necessarily go get 350 carries, that they are trying to elongate his career and keep him as healthy as possible. So why would you be putting him out there in late May to do anything right now?
The last three seasons for Gurley is age 22 through age 24 seasons. He's ranged between 256 and 259 carries. He's also had between 40 and 60 catches as well. So this guy has been a touch monster for them, around, you know, probably averages around 300 touches a year in his career. I'm going to set the over-under right here for you, Greg Rosenthal, for Todd Gurley touches in 2019 at 237.5.
I was assuming I would go under with any number you gave me, but that's
I'm going way over.
That's
that
a pretty low number. He has averaged in the last 3 years over 320 touches per year, so that is a big drop off.
This year is a lot different than last year, though.
Yep.
With what we're hearing.
I don't know. I might go under.
Set it low.
Here's the thing. I heard Steve Wyche talking about this, and the Rams are saying this was the plan going into the offseason. We have a load management type of plan like in the NBA, and it's all this stuff. No, it's significant to me. I think it's quite significant, and it's not an alarm bell, but Saquon Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott and Christian McCaffrey and Derrick Henry and Frank Gore and Lamar, like none of these other guys have these sort of plans. You know, they're not sitting out of OTAs because people think that there's value to OTAs.
I think it's everything we don't know about Todd Gurley.
It's eye-opening.
I agree with you.
Let's move on to news involving Wes. Speaking of your love of Cincinnati, their football team is the Bengals, and head coach Marvin Lewis spent years and years and years and years there.
Marvin Lewis is an idiot.
He toiled.
He toiled in Cincinnati forever. Finally, parted ways with the team and was unattached for a while. But now that is no longer the case. He has joined the Arizona State football staff, led by head coach Herm Edwards. Herm Edwards and Marvin Lewis together, and I have a statement from Herm that I'd like to read. Can we some missive music, please? Ricky Hollywood, if you have it. Marvin Lewis is one of the most respected minds in our game, whether as the winningest coach in the franchise history of the Cincinnati Bengals or the architect of one of the greatest defenses in NFL history, the 2000 Baltimore Ravens. Marvin has succeeded everywhere he has been, and he has done it the right way. His passion for teaching will be an incredible benefit, not only for our coaches, but also for the young men we are responsible for as students and athletes. Wes, Will there be, we talked about a reckoning on the last show, Greg, the Sublime somehow getting a reckoning 20 years later. Will there be a reckoning years down the line where people will appreciate Marvin Lewis a little bit more in Cincinnati than we do now, where he's seen as a guy that hung around too long and never won?
I would guess not. Because people are married to their illusions and their narratives. And the narratives are that Marvin Lewis stayed around too long and wasn't that great of a coach. I maintain when you look at the history of what coaches have done under Mike Brown, Marvin Lewis is in a tier of his own, and he is way better than anybody Mike Brown's been able to get to coach that football team.
Like the we've talked about on the pod, when I interviewed former Cincinnati player Salmon Wilcox, former NFL Network personality for the Payne Rankings, Marvin Lewis raised the Titanic.
Absolutely.
I think also with the Bengals, when he went to Cincinnati, they were operating almost unlike any other team in the dark ages when it came to the draft. And you look at some of their draft classes and the way that they built a lot of those teams inside out. That's where you'd want to appreciate him. But what is sports? You have to show winning seasons, championship seasons. He does not need to be overcredited for what they achieved in January, which was nothing.
And he wants to stay in football, clearly. I mean, that's an interesting combination there, Herman, Marvin Lewis. I just checked. Herm Edwards, 7-6, second place in his division in the Pac-12 South last year. But they were 7-6 the year before. So
Marvin will serve as a special advisor. Finally in the news, Mark, you sent this in our instant message client 2 days in a row as a news topic, so I'm going to give it to you here. I'm going to tee you up here. Madden NFL 20, the venerable franchise for NFL football, on your home console, the video game. Weird setup. they added a play that all teams can use. It's called the Philly Special. And the play, according to EA Sports' Anthony White, who confirmed this on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast last week. The play is listed under the pistol formation, but the set is called Philly. When you look at the play, it says Philly Special and then fake Philly Special. And as Nick Tony, who writes for NFL.com, added, 67 fans signed a change.org petition.
They got all 67 of them.
to make sure Philly Special made its way into Madden 20. I would imagine, Mark, you were responsible for 30 to 70, 67 of those signatures. Congratulations.
You know, I saw, because this has been obviously bubbling up in not only my timeline, but yours, Dan, and I saw the little, and you can go visit Dan's replies and mentions if you want to find it. The little SWAT you took this morning, you know what I felt? Nothing.
What was the SWAT? I want to hear it.
It was that it's essentially nothing more than an option for like any sort of two-point conversion play was your argument.
And that's fine. It's so basic that it's in a playbook now.
That's fine. We also were asked by the Associated Press to rank the top 50 plays of all time. And while the helmet catch that the three of you were so enamored by was in there, I found it interesting that there was a second helmet catch to pick from as well among the crop of top plays. So also unoriginal. But I this time around,
everybody run the Philly Special?
What's the other helmet catch?
Antonio Brown.
I didn't know that one.
I didn't either.
For that in the top 50.
But, I mean, I know
well, it didn't
now
make
I know
my
that
top
play,
50,
but you don't even think about that. Yeah. That, please.
Point being, I mean, almost nothing in football is that original. Let's start there. And I feel nothing at this point by your slings and arrows. I don't really – it has no meaning to me.
For listeners, newer listeners of the show, Mark lost a sandwich prop, the Super Bowl, because he
– Well, I just didn't win it.
He said in the Super Bowl 52 preview show that there would be a play that would become the most famous play in NFL Super Bowl history. And Mark is sticking to his guns that Philly Special is the most important famous play in the history of Super Bowl.
I am sticking.
Just think how ridiculous that sounds. Just me even setting it up.
Well, it doesn't sound ridiculous to many people. It simply isn't what you believe, and you're the host, so you can pound your little message home as much as you want.
I think it's
you and Eagles fans.
It's
not me and Eagles fans.
It's easily the most influential second quarter play in a game that was going to have four more lead changes.
Well, you got your little bit in too, and that's fine. Wes, whenever you want to roll on in with your David Tyree scenario.
Well, 67 people for the
you asked for this, Mark.
I don't care about the 67 people. That is a weak statistic.
sounds and, more like a roundup than a petition.
That's a mess.
That's pretty weak. That's not 67 the,
that,
fans.
That's not what I would be leaning on as my argument that 67 people signed a petition.
I got to go introduce myself.
That's sad.
Tony,
I mean, that's pathetic. That's a sad little petition.
Or how about this? If you're Madden, and I'd have no, I think it's good they put it in the game. Why not have more fun? Are you swayed to change the foundation of your programming by 67 people? I find that interesting because we could get 67 people to get anything into that game. Apparently,
it's fair. That's fair.
Bengals team dressed in pink
might be an upgrade.
Let's do that.
That's what's happening in the news. Okay, let's get into it. Greg got up early for the French Open. I mean, it just to me, it seems crazy. But listen, I'm not a tennis fan. Maybe if it was like the Yankees are playing in London against the Red Sox in July, maybe that game's early. I don't know. I would get up for that. So I don't.
Yeah, and there's only a couple of these Grand Slams a year. Well, there's four, but a couple really in our wheelhouse of the offseason.
And your wife is pushing. Your wife, Emeka, a great woman, good to spend time with her a couple weeks ago at the Wes Lakeisha nuptials. She's pushing hard for you guys to be back east. What about the idea of you would not have to be waking up before the sunrise if you were living in New York like your wife wants?
Yeah, for the most part, sports schedules are much better, I would say, on the West Coast. But
or travel further east and go to France.
But when it comes,
I agree with you.
When it comes to tennis, I would say it's a little worse overall. Although you get a little edge with the Aussie Open. I mean, tennis, it's everywhere.
That's true.
Counter argument: your children become sports fans, which they already are, and they're up till 1 in the morning watching Monday Night Football on the East Coast.
Oh yeah.
I think on
it's much
balance,
better for football. Yeah,
it was a huge boon for an East Coaster to come to the West Coast. Like, yeah. I love, we're talking about baseball, a lot of the games start at 4 p.m. That is beautiful. I love it. Oh, by the time my wife is home, she doesn't have to. When we lived in New York, she got banged, and not in a good way. She would have to sit there and watch the Yankees. Now, when she's home from work, the Yankees are done. They're wrapping up. Chapman's on the mound.
It's a good situation for you and Emma.
For us, Sunday Night Football.
Yep. So you're saying now that she gets banged in a good way?
It's a much more positive scenario now.
This is a family podcast, Greg.
You said it.
I used to love when I was younger, like pulling down a West Coast Vince Scully game or like a UCLA basketball game back when the O'Bannon brothers were playing.
Dan sweating.
That was fun because you could stay up late and you could watch it. You feel like you're getting away with something.
Or like March Madness where they'd click over to the West Coast games late. I missed the East Coast side of it, but not as a parent, not as all that stuff.
Also, with technology, you can watch a game the next day on your own time, whatever.
As Damashek once said, in a different situation when we would go to a Dodger Stadium game, a day game, you're cheating life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're watching daytime sports sometimes. Okay. That's what's happening in the news. Oh, no, I already did that. Now we're talking about what you're getting up early for. Okay?
Oh, yeah, we started that.
Yeah, we started that. That's how that whole thing started. So what are we getting up early for, figuratively, for the NFL? And, Greg, this is a great segment idea that you came up with, so I want you to start it, get the group going here.
Sure. When I thought about this, The first name that came to mind.
Mike has the French Open on
his
computer
checked it
right
quickly.
Now.
He's just watching it.
Now, the Yankees are playing right
it's
now.
It's just in the
I'm
background. It's in the background. We've had sports up there. Relax. what was the first name that came to my mind? It was Lamar Jackson. And then I went through all the teams and all – and Mark's getting a scowl on his face right
now.
No. I can see it.
No.
He's still thinking about the Philly Special.
And I tried to actually go through all the teams and what else would it be? Is like that the first answer not the right one? But he really is the thing I'm most excited about is watching that offense. He made a little bit of news this week by saying he didn't know they were installing an entirely new offense under Greg Roman until he showed up for OTAs, which is curious in general. I don't know what to make of it, but it's curious. Maybe it's because the offense isn't going to be that much different. Greg Roman was very involved, but when Greg Roman was running the 49ers, I was so excited for that Colin Kaepernick, the first season where he took over and then the first full season he had as a starter. And now it's 6 years later and the rest of the NFL is doing something totally different with spread offenses. But the Ravens have this vision of how they're going to run offense. It's going to have a lot of tight ends. It's going to have a lot of running. I think Lamar Jackson's going to be underrated as a passer. And just on a week-to-week basis, I am so excited to just see that. Like that is what's got my juices flowing more than anything else for the 2019 season.
You're invested in Lamar Jackson. I've sensed that since he took the job.
I think it's just fun to see when teams are zigging when the rest of the league is zagging, and I love running quarterbacks. I've always like wanted like the running quarterback concept to work on a more consistent level. Like I love watching Cam Newton. Cam Newton's been one of my favorite, you know, players to come into the league, certainly. And that's worked on, you know, a certain level, and parts of it's been fun. But I think the Ravens are doing it with a commitment that we haven't seen. I can't really think of a team that's been as different as I think the Ravens will be with Lamar Jackson. And Greg Roman's got some skins on the wall. Your old buddy, Mark Sessler. Some proof that he can maybe do it and think outside the box.
Not my buddy.
Some pelts.
Anymore.
Notice you didn't mention the last year or two he had in San Francisco.
No, then it went horribly. And maybe this, I don't know if this is going to have staying power. I don't know. There's no way to really know. But I think the NFL is changing and there's room for different ideas. And they're a team that loves having tight ends on the field anyways. And they're going to do that. They're going to run. I thought they were fun to watch at the end of last season.
All right. So that's what Greg's getting up early for. Wes, what are you getting up early for?
Well, when I thought about this, there was a first place and then a distant second place and everyone after. I'm getting up early for Baker Mayfield to Odell.
That was my number two.
Baker to Odell, and you can throw in Chubb and the rest of that offense. To me, I want to see what similarities are there to the 2007 Patriots with the spacing that Odell Beckham's going to provide, the downfield threat. Jarvis Landry maybe in the Wes Welker role. Chubb is a better running back than anybody on the 2007 Patriots. Antonio Callaway in the Dante Stallworth role.
Wow.
I'm excited about this offense.
Comparing him to one of the best offenses of the last 20 years.
I could be totally wrong. It's just a vision I have.
I don't think that you're – I think there's – why would you be wrong other than the fact that I don't know what the 2000 Patriots did up front on their line, but you know they were well
great.
Coached as they always are. And Cleveland to me has question marks, and we've mentioned this every time we're with the Browns, left tackle, right tackle, and frankly, you're going to be starting a second-year player that barely played last year in the interior line too. So that all needs to work out. Or what? Like, you can't have Baker Mayfield running for his life back there. I mean, the way they coached a pretty questionable line last year at the tackle spot is encouraging.
They were pretty good.
Can you do that twice?
Their line was fine last year. It didn't really
especially
get in their
post
way.
Hugh Jackson.
Right.
Post Hugh Jackson it was.
Baker was one of the least sacked quarterbacks in the league when Freddie Kitchens was calling.
I mean, that would have been my second option. I just figured in this room. I mean, how could he not be excited
about
Baker?
That's interesting. You're bringing up the 2007 Patriots, which to me, there are other offenses that I think have even surpassed them now with yardage. There was a couple other. What was the Broncos in 2000?
Right, but that's...
But I'm saying 13, but I think that's the best. And I think the only thing I would say to that is Tom Brady was the greatest quarterback ever at the peak of his powers that season. Could Baker make
it? But heading into that season, he had never even thrown for 30 touchdowns, much less 50.
Right, but I'm just saying the idea Mayfield would have to take a pretty huge leap to be Tom Brady.
I mean, I think if you take the Baker Mayfield of November and December, he could easily throw for 40-plus touchdowns this year.
We love quarterbacks, ultimately, and like to me, Mayfield's the most exciting quarterback to come into the league, I don't know, since I've been covering it. I mean, Luck is up there, but in terms of my hopes of what his career might be like, I don't know. There's no one else I can think of sparked that much excitement, or at least in my mind, going into the second
it's a
year.
Big part of sports. It's one of the reasons why Favre remains my favorite quarterback to watch of all time, because he was the most fun.
Mark, how about you? What are you getting up for besides the Browns?
Can I give you an A and a B? Because I like chaos more than I can't wait to watch this three technique, you know, battle wits against a guard. So, two things, and it actually to counter Greg. You would think I would
out
never
with an abacus in a chessboard.
Yeah, there's some brawn involved, I believe.
You would never think I'd go Ravens, but I think that we may get in this newfangled offense, and I do think that you've got the right coordinator there to do it all. Taysom Hill Part 2 potentially. with Trace McSorley, because they've already come out on record, John Harbaugh, multiple
times. That's what gets you up in the morning.
Well, just because, no, because I have actually A, B, and C, because part B would be the Cardinals offense, because it's new, and we've already dug into that 100 times. But the idea that they have this guy that they're going to use all over the place in an offense that I think will be very unpredictable with the Ravens to begin with, and they didn't draft him to be a non-quarterback. They said they're going to use him all over the place as a quarterback, too. I like that kind of player. Taysom Hill is one of my most intriguing guys out there last year to me.
I think that's fair. I wonder if Trace McSorley's going to make the team. Is he a seventh round draft pick or a sixth round draft pick?
It's part of it. I think he will make the team. I'm banking on that, or my point has zero oomph behind it. My third thing.
How about what Taysom Hill does for a second time around the league?
Well, that's right up there too. My third thing is which desperate team just before the deadline trades a second round pick for Colts backup Jacoby Brissett. It's going to happen.
You think they're getting a second?
Yes. I think Ultra Chaos is going to unfurl for two or three teams, and there's going to be a bidding war for Jacoby Brissett. Wait and see.
I like this.
Book it.
Because if chaos does happen, then the Colts can hold the team over a barrel and get that second.
Mark's been in the take game a long time. You don't want to be the last person to the take. Anyone shows up on McSorley Corner, Brissett fever, Mark's like, I'm already there.
The corner is crowded. Pick a new corner.
The Brissett one's actually, because Brissett, you would think like that peak corner was a couple of years ago. You're getting back in when everybody kind of moved on from Brissett. So
I like Jacoby Brissett.
You've come out on the other side of take corner, and you're back on first take.
I don't know if I was there to begin with, but I am there late, but I'm the only one there now.
Which is a second rounder, you think?
I know that sounds insane, but if it's also a team that is sort of shifting in the wind with the, which what I would imagine be an injured quarterback or two in front of them, that may not be the future. That's not a crazy thing to give up. It'd have to be like a Vikings team
that's like 5-2 or something like that,
right?
You know, and loses Cousins,
right?
He's a free agent at the end of the year,
right?
And he was one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL when he played.
That's all in the past. The future is bright.
What gets me up in the morning is kickers. You know that. Everyone knows. You know. That's
true.
It's all I care about. So I decided to take a spin around the league just to see some of the good, like, solid kicker battles. And, like, Wes's, the 2019 Browns are going to be the 2007 Patriots. That's fine. I'm more interested in the 2019 Browns kicker battle. Let's start there. Where Greg Joseph, who, you know, Mark, you know, up and down last year. To be kind. And you got Austin Seabird in there as well. And Mike Pryfer, who's the new special teams coordinator, he likes both options. And he had this to say, they're getting better as well. It's a work in progress, but they are both very strong, very talented. I'm excited where they're at. And it's a fluid competition in Cleveland. Mm. Spinning on to the Giants, where Aldrick Rosas.
One of the best kickers in
the
league.
One of the best. And you would think, oh, he's got it done. Pro Football Focus had him as the best kicker in the league. I think he was second All-Pro last year. He is only the fourth Giants kicker ever to make the Pro Bowl. Well, why is Joey Sly in the building?
Camp leg.
Camp leg, perhaps. But Rosas, Joey Sly.
Joey Sly. Yeah. That sounds like a name you made up.
He kicked for VTech from 2014
Mafia.
Through 17.
V-Tech.
Definitely sounds like a damn name.
VTech.
Hey, Joey Sly.
And VTech Sly, mm-hmm. He was very good, actually. He was a 4-year starter, All Atlantic Coast Conference, that's ACC selection. Semifinalist for the Lou Groza Award, which is presented, of course.
I mean, usually.
To the top kicker.
How about you win the award? I'm not really impressed with your semifinalist.
Wait, are there also finalists? Or does that mean he's like in the final three?
He's like, well, he didn't even make
that's a very. Finalist also means you didn't win, by the way. So.
All right. Well, he was in the conversation.
Okay.
Anyway.
It's a very long conversation.
Joey Sly, he was signed after a tryout. This month, and he's a long shot because Rosas really had a nice year, but he also struggled. Aldrick did. I'm just going to call him Aldrick mightily in 2017. So I think the Giants are hedging their bets. They're going to bring in Joey Sly.
Is that right?
And if he kicks well in the summer, they'll either give him a practice squad designation or say, hey, don't lose our number. We're going to see how Aldrick looks. Spinning forward to Chicago, we know where we're going on here, what's going on here. Chris Blewett. Can't believe that's his name. Elliot Fry and Eddie Pinheiro all in the mix. And safeties coach of the Bears, Sean Desai, doesn't think he's ever seen that many kickers under one roof. When I coached in college, we might have had that many on our roster when you have 150 guys. And this was interesting.
That's going to be that's the most high-profile one, for sure.
For sure. For the Bears' first OTA practice.
Use one of them like Trace McSorley if you need to.
The goalposts looked a little different. They had a second set of uprights built within the standard uprights, narrowing the target space. Pinheiro was the only guy with real kicking experience in the NFL. Missed the narrow uprights on a second and final attempt with a few.
Maybe give him more than two attempts.
So that's a situation. Mm. Moving on to San Francisco, we've got an interesting situation going on with Robbie Gould, who is one of the more accurate kickers of the last 10, 12 years in the NFL, and he's unhappy, though. The Niners slapped him with the franchise tag, and he wants out. He wants a trade. Well, guess what? Your boy, Mark Sessler, Kyle Shanahan, says, we're not going to trade him. And we also know this is his last year here. So the writing's on the wall. Meanwhile, and this should be interesting to you, Jonathan Brown, they brought him on the roster. So he's kicking, maybe a camp leg, maybe in case of emergency situation, if Gold retires, does something. Gold puts his house on the market in Chicago. Now, why is that important to know? The Bears and Gold have a rich history together.
The history is very rich here.
And Gold has made no secret about wanting to get back to Chicago. And we know the Bears, as we just talked about, have a very difficult situation cooking right now with their kicking game. It would be a match made in heaven, but it's not going to happen. Meanwhile, Gold, yes, he puts his house on the market, so, oh, he's given up on his Bear dreams? No, he's building a new home in the Chicago area. True.
Mm. Your move, Shannon.
Wait, where's the Jonathan Brown part we're interested in?
That he's in the building. Just okay. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
That's just something to keep in the back of your mind. This is not just Gold alone on the roster. So he might be on San Francisco right now, Robbie, but guess what? He's building a house in Chicago. That's where he'll be kicking in 2020 at the latest. Couple more real quick.
Oh, keep going.
The Vikings have just hired Nate Kading as their part-time consultant, Tom Pelissero reported. Now, Nate Kading, why is that name ringing a bell? Nate Kading had a nice career in the NFL, kicked about 10, 12 years, mostly at the Chargers.
For a while, was the most accurate kicker in history.
Yes, he retired with a good point, Wes. He retired with a 82.4% career percentage.
But he missed that kick against the Jets.
He missed three kicks.
Yeah, but those who can't do, they teach,
baby.
It's
also true for every kicker but Vinatieri. They end up missing kicks that ruin their career.
In the 2009 AFC Divisional Playoffs against the Jets, Kading missed three field goals, including 37 and 40. He also missed one against the Jets as a rookie in 2004 that cost the San Diego Chargers. So he had some down moments, but he's in the building. And remember, entering his sixth season, Mike Zimmer is on his fourth kicker. Dan Bailey is currently in the building, but Bailey's kind of shot.
This is turning into performance art.
He replaced Daniel Carlson, who replaced, of course, Kai Forbath, Kai's Kai, who replaced Blair Walsh. And we remember what happened with Blair Walsh against the Seattle Seahawks in the playoffs that fateful cold day. Finally, my favorite kicker battle to track. And a lot of people are saying Chicago. Mm. What I'm all about right now is what's going on with the Bucs right now. Cairo Santos. He's the incumbent, and he brought some stability to that Tampa Bay roster, which was reeling from the Robbie Aguayo bust at the second round a couple years back. Well, guess what? The Bucs didn't get scared. They said, we're going to go back to the draft well. We're going to use a fifth-round pick on Matt Gay. And this is a big kid. Seabass out of the league. That guy was built like a linebacker. Well, take a look at the figure on Matt Gay. He's got a big leg, and he is obviously the favorite here. Jason Light, the Bucs general manager. He's a big guy with a big leg, but he's also accurate. He kicks in Utah, but he's also good at sea level. Chris Bonial, remember him from Dallas?
Yes.
My history in coaching when I was in Dallas, it's always been to go get a free agent and let's make the best of it with the most competitive guys you can get. So, yes, Gay is in the lead. Vote Gay, you would think, if you had to make a pick who's going to be the kicker. But keep an eye on Cairo Santos, who doesn't leave the league easily. That is what I get up in the morning for.
I'd say this, your extremely dense update won me over with the late music.
Well, the music was nice. I have a question, follow-up question on your sermon.
Yes.
What exactly are you getting up to watch? The narrow uprights kicking? Them actually kicking in week one? Like,
well,
which part
footage?
Of it are you getting up to?
Reading the reports.
The drama, the battle.
The lead-up with the mini, OTAs, and then – mini camp. And
so
then,
you
want to
be a fly on the wall in OTAs, in training camp practices.
I want to be a fly on one of the narrow uprights. And I just want to see it all. I just want to watch the world burn.
Mm. Fair enough. A fly on one of the narrow uprights.
What a vantage point. Right. Get up really high, and Greg Joseph will not hit you because he's the one kicker in the league that's trying to revolutionize the sport with only line drive kicks.
Oh, I know.
I've never seen such a thing.
Never worked.
He's going with a low angle.
Well, not with Austin Siebert there. He's going to come in there and correct the way Mike they
Pryfer
do things.
Mike Pryfer likes the battle. All right. We have an ad read. Let's move on. So there you go. That's what we get up in the morning for. Omaha Steaks. Here, we're at it again. This Father's Day, give Dad a gift pack with Omaha Steaks, the ones he craves. Go to omahasteaks.com and enter code ROUND in the search bar for 74% off the Father's Day Steak Fix gift package. That's a $235 value. Now for only $59.99. Now, Ricky, I don't even know what to order. There's so many great options.
They have so much, Dan.
Like what?
Like, they have two tender filet mignon.
That's the nicest cut of meat you can get in the business.
Yeah, and also two bold top sirloins.
Wes, you ever put that in the Jules Sous Vide?
I've not done the sirloin, no.
I feel
but
like
I will.
A good natural fit.
What about two savory pork chops?
I've done pork chops.
Four Omaha steak burgers?
Too much.
Next on my list.
What else?
Oh, my God, four massive gourmet jumbo Franks.
You know, that one I'm going to have to come around on. But I like that it's here, and I'm keeping an open mind.
Yeah, but your children would enjoy, I believe, hot dogs.
Right, yeah.
You're
cooking for this many people. It's the party pack.
Right.
You want to have a variety because different people have different tastes than yourself.
Well, let me tell you what's going on with the Franks these days. You know, back in the day, it used to be all the bits of the animals that nobody wanted. Because you don't want to throw that away. What these gourmet companies are doing, you're throwing the brisket in there.
Sure.
You're throwing the best cuts of meat into your Franks, and now you've got a great sausage.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, well, four mass wieners, four crispy chicken fried steaks.
That's good. I never had one. My wife's from Texas.
Oh, they're so good.
What is it?
A chicken fried steak is basically a steak.
That's fried.
But it has what you see on fried chicken, that type of batter around it. Drop it in. It's not healthy, but it is delicious.
It tastes delicious.
Yeah, with the right – it's underrated. You can't – yes. It's not an everyday thing, but it's underrated.
Go to a southern state.
Fort Worth, Texas.
Have you ever had all beef meatballs?
Probably.
Well, they're in this too.
That'd be good.
Order now and get this exclusive Omaha Steaks Father's Day Steak Fix Package valued at $235 for just $59.99. Just go to omahasteaks.com and type code ROUND into the search bar. That's omahasteaks.com. Type ROUND into the search bar to get the Father's Day Steak Fix Package today. Father's Day's coming up, a couple of weeks away. And
now it's our time.
It's out.
Yes.
Enough with Mother's Day. Let's get to what
wasn't going there. But.
Well, I mean, if you are a parent, you know that Mother's Day typically is a day where the mom, in some cases, in urban settings, vanishes for the entire day, and dad is thrust into a 13 or 14-hour parenting scenario. Well, now it's Father's Day. What's going to happen? It's going to get real.
Where are you going?
What about Barbara?
Well, it's different when it's your mother. I wish only rest and relaxation for her on any day.
That's fair.
All right.
Let's get into the mailbag. We asked for questions. You gave them. You gave us some great topics to chew on. Wes, we'll start the wedding now. It was almost 2 weeks ago. Well, not a week and a half ago. And people are asking, Cody Winters, Lego Bucks fan, who caught the Paramore's bouquet?
There was no throwing of bouquet. There was no garter belt stuff. We didn't do all the traditional wedding
thing. Oh, yeah, you skipped the cake thing. Nice move.
Oh, yeah, you didn't do the cake either.
Thing's over.
No, we had cupcakes and like a sweet station.
Right. I didn't think that's the first wedding that didn't involve the cutting of the cake and the putting it in each other's face. And
well, look, I don't need any of that stuff. And if Lakeisha says she doesn't need it, that's music to my ears.
Plus, it's like at that point in the wedding, you're ready to just start letting
loose.
Let's stop.
Now for the pomp and circumstance.
Exactly.
My responsibilities are over for the night.
And the tossing the bouquet thing, which I like it because it's sort of a wild card scenario. It's a pressure cooker, I think, for the collection of women trying to catch the bouquet.
That's why
they're out there because you haven't figured anything out on the romantic front, and now you've got to win in this athletic event.
It's like a combination of some sweat, a little bit of desperation, and then, you know, some fun as well.
But it's also
an enjoyable aspect.
I think it's meant for people in their 20s. And like Lakeisha's, you know, late 30s. I'm in my 40s. There's not as many people left to catch the bouquet.
That's fair as well. All right, let's move on. Poop Stokes says, has this to ask. How come Doug Peterson gets no love as a head coach? Won the Super Bowl with a backup along with a playoff game the following year. There's an argument he's better than NFL glory boy Sean McVay.
I think Doug Peterson gets a ton of credit. I never understood these why doesn't he get any love things, because I've heard nothing but love for Doug Peterson for like 2.5 years now.
He wrote a memoir.
Well, anybody
he's doing fine.
Memoir.
Well, I'm just
I
saying,
know where this like, is coming from. The Eagles fans were upset. There was some ranking because I remembered in my mentions where McVay was second and Peterson wasn't in the top five or something, just by some random
writer. I think he gets a little bit overlooked.
I think he got hurt because, namely, had Frank Wright not taken the Colts job and Josh McDaniels had, we would still be puzzling over who was doing what with the Colts or with the Eagles. And Frank Reich did not help Doug Peterson at all by going to Indianapolis and totally transforming that team.
It's a fair point.
It'll change quickly if Carson Wentz is half as good as like the OTA reports, which is like he's lighting up the skies.
But
is that how they say it?
To your point, to Reich obviously went to Indy and had a great year. But Peterson, they got a playoff spot and they won a playoff game. So Peterson didn't come off terribly.
But that's why I don't think I don't think anyone's like thinking, oh, he's actually the 20th best coach.
He would be in my top five.
Yeah,
he's on the right side of the. What did we decide was the? I call it the Garrett scale, but I people weren't in agreement.
Oh, because Garrett is quite obviously below the average, the median.
I find him to be the prime meridian, but I was curious.
That could work. The Garrett scale? I mean, Marvin Lewis.
It was Marvin Lewis. It's everything Bengals fits right in the middle. So,
Richard, at Not That Hunter, asks, I'm a fan without a team, having abandoned the team that left San Diego, that being the Chargers. I'm thinking of becoming a Packers fan. Can I make the change before Rodgers retires without being a bandwagoner? Interesting.
Yes, I think the fact that the Chargers left you, you can do whatever you want. And who knows? If you get sick of the Packers after a few years, jump around. I don't know. There's no rules for you now.
I think it's twofold. You cannot be killed for picking a new team when what happened with the Chargers happened. Totally cool with that. You cannot jump on the Packers and not absorb people calling you a bandwagon. You just got to let. You got to own it. You got to explain why, and you got to.
That's where your heart's leading you, though.
That's fine, though. But you can't. You're jumping onto a nice scenario.
It's most rewarding when it's organic. You can't just say, "Oh, I like watching Rodgers." It has to be like during the season. You just find yourself pulling for this team, and then over and over, right. That keeps happening.
Like Wes and the Broncos.
Wes is like, "Get me to my honeymoon. Get me out of here." Studio. Moving on, Justin Frick asks, what take did you have that crushed you the most when it turned out to be wrong? Ooh. I mean, no shortage of options here for any of us here in the studio. We've done like 900 episodes. So, Mark, we'll start with you.
There's a lot. Honorable mention, anything I ever said about Colt Laierla. The tight end who came and went very quickly, who I was convinced was Gronk Part 2. I remember lighting up.
Did he have legal issues? Or
yes, yeah. As did, I believe, the next person I'm about to mention, although maybe to a lesser degree. When the Browns did not, after all the players were cut in training camp, sign Duron Carter to become their number one wide receiver. And I spent,
Think,
large parts of Sunday into Monday texting the three of you super annoyed at Ray Farmer and the Browns.
The low moment.
Perhaps he knew what he was doing, Ray Farmer, back then. Briefly.
Anything else? Those are your two?
The fact that I wrote a letter to Zach Mettenberger did not come out too
well. I thought
well,
you were maybe going to go with maybe the most famous making the leap of them all, Toby Gerhart.
Well, I mean, anything with making the leap was suspicious. But I mean, I started writing every Browns quarterback since we've been doing the show. I mean, there's no end to – I thought Eric Mangini was Bill Belichick Part 2 during part of latter stages of 2009. Who knows?
Browns Draft Day, that movie review.
You know what? I hate to shatter it because I still get 20 of these mentions a week. It's not even in my top 200 movies. Not even close.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah, I am. Haven't I proved that already?
Well, 20 mentions a week on draft day. Wow.
Ruthless. When our friend Connor Orr did a breakout special on draft day a couple weeks ago.
Right.
For SI.com, yes.
Yes. Just, it's like I'm logging off Twitter for the week. I'm sure he did a great job with it, but I got pulled into it.
It was full of heart from start to finish, they say.
They do.
Wes?
There are many different ways for human beings to be wrong, and I feel like I've run the gamut on all of them. But have you ever heard the Jackie Robinson story about Loud Wrong?
No.
So 1947, he is a rookie, and there's also a pitcher on the Brooklyn Dodgers named Dan Bankhead, who was a Negro League veteran. So there were two black guys on the 47 Dodgers, and they were in the clubhouse arguing, and Don Bankhead's in his 30s at the time. He turns to like a 22-year-old Jackie Robinson and says, "Jack, not only are you loud, you're loud. You're not only are you wrong, you're loud wrong." And I was that for Nick Foles. That one I don't regret because he – good for him. He went on to have a great career. He proved me wrong. Byron Leftwich, that's the one I was loud wrong on the longest. I thought he was going to be a great quarterback. And one of my friends from Cincinnati reminded me last week at the wedding about – going on about Byron Leftwich for years and years and years and just being totally wrong.
There was a lot to like with Byron Leftwich.
I think I learned something from him. Like, I don't think I knew enough about football at the time to know that you can't take a long windup before you throw the ball.
Yeah. I'll stick with quarterback Tom Brady. Gradual decline. I stand by the logic, even looking back now. It was before.
This was going into the 2018 season?
This was going into what was their previous Super Bowl before this one?
2016.
2017.
The winner.
Coming out of 2016 after the Falcons.
They've been
won.
In three in a row. So 2016.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, so right. He was entering his, I believe, age 39 season, and we had never seen. Warren Moon was functional, I believe, around that age, but I felt that this would be the year, or that would be the year that he fell off. And I think he started very slowly that year, and it wasn't looking too terribly, but he came on like a banshee. I think he might have won MVP. I think he...
I mean, he's been doing lots of things.
He ended up performing very well that year, won the Super Bowl, and I think he's been to two more since. So I think I got that one wrong. Now, he is now in gradual decline, and anyone who disagrees is just... they got the blinders on because, you know, they are... Patriots fans and they can't see reality, but I was easily 2 years ahead of that in a bad way.
But you realize it's just because he's getting old. You're like, oh, I can see it. It's like you're just fighting time. It's not like you are seeing this player going down.
Right. I was banking on the history more.
I think he came in second for the MVP that year and then won it the next year.
Right.
So, yeah, they've made three straight Super Bowls since then.
It seems like it's a bit of an exhausting hill to stand on where you're sort of slow motion rooting for the demise of someone who keeps hitting mountaintop moments over and over. Yeah,
it will end, though. It will end. The theory
this year
has to end.
It's over now.
I said that for 5 years.
This is it.
When I you know, we saw this question ahead of time. The takes that hurt me the most were when I was doing fantasy football. Those would keep me up at night when I really was on a hill for someone.
You really nailed Antonio Bryant.
And then would be, it would be wrong. One that stands out is Lamont Jordan. I think I ranked him like fifth going into the season, and he was very generic, and that pained me. Ronnie Brown multiple times pained me. Tatum Bell was one I remember. You know, it's like, oh, Tatum Bell, he's going to have to beat Quentin Griffin. That'll be easy. He's going to be the next Broncos back. And then it's like when you get those wrong, there wasn't even Twitter at that point, but you would just get 50 to 100 emails of people that were upset.
So much more personal.
Right. It's just like so many emails, and especially when it was like a player that I legitimately really liked, like Lamont
emails,
Jordan and
that
Ronnie
feels
Brown.
Glorious.
It like double hurt.
Kevin Barlow was one for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
two more questions. Michael Healy, at Michael J. Healy. Mark, this is actually directed at you, but I'm curious what other people think. Who is your favorite Spice Girl? Who is your favorite Spice Girl?
Because we did discuss this a little downstairs, and I think that the 20-something-year-old me was all about Baby Spice. The 30-something-year-old me was way into Sporty Spice. But the me of today, and there's no one even close, Scary Spice, Mel B. I think she'd just be fun. She's got some skeletons in the closet. She's not going to judge you. She's just going to have a good old time.
She's been number one on the list for me the whole time.
That is Really, Wes?
Oh, yeah. Mel B. Come on.
I get it. Makes sense. By the way, I've never heard anyone pound the table for Sporty Spice.
Yeah.
That's a first.
I think that's maybe the appeal, is that it's not the one everyone's always going on about. It's like,
yeah, well, I was definitely cliche ginger. I love the Jerry Halliwell. I was
That's cliche. Well, I would have thought I would have been Victoria Beckham. What was
posh?
Posh Spice.
Really?
Huh. At the time, sure.
I don't find posh to be attractive.
I mean,
David Beckham does.
you're digging too deep here.
Finally, last question. Good. Oh, by the way, Vulture, which is the New York Magazine culture blog, just ranked every Spice Girls song.
Every song?
Every song.
Feels like a tiresome chore.
I like two of them.
Wannabe was number one, where it deserves to be. Got it right.
Feels like. How long does the list go on?
The only one that anyone knows.
Maybe get more sleep that week instead.
There's like five or six decent ones. There's only 38 Spice Girls songs. How about that?
Still feels like a long assignment.
The catalog's only that.
You know, yeah. Who would have thunk it? You know, burn bright, but brief.
Finally, this one from our old friend, Tristan at reject_CKY. What's the latest on the Delaware saga? Are your children still suffering at the hands of a merciless Greg Rosenthal?
Whose
children?
Will they
ever
Ours.
Be happy again?
Release the tapes.
Help me. I'm so hungry. We need your help. We need this. Come on, Greg. We are the future. Will you be my dad? We need
of course.
Help, Greg.
Greg Delaware.
Who asked, will you be my dad?
I think that had to be Jack, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Of course, that's Delaware right. is your high school band and a listener of the show throughout the option, because Greg does not want to bring the tapes in. He doesn't want us to hear him singing what was like kind of prog rock. Was that the best way to put it?
I mean, it was essentially emo. Nothing. It was like it was nothing.
Okay. Well, it was something.
It was I don't know.
And after years, we got you finally to acknowledge that you actually have tapes in your possession. The original story is that they were lost to the sands of time. Maybe somebody else in the band had them. Now you're telling us that you have them and you don't want to share them, which is your right.
I don't know that for sure. And I think it would be one tape, but yes. Yeah.
And it's your right not to play the tapes on our show. But then a listener threw it out there. Hey, what if we raised money for a charity of Greg's choosing in exchange for the tapes, which put Greg in a bit of a morality tough spot.
Why don't we just raise money for the
An ethical corner.
You know, yeah. The definition of charity is you're doing something without expecting something back. So
that's what the kids are asking
just,
of
just
you.
Just do it.
But that
Release
would be great.
The tapes.
And if the world was just charities for nothing else but charity, and there's no strings attached, that'd be great. But that's not what's being laid out.
There'd never be an ice bucket challenge.
Right.
What is that supposed to mean?
I mean, that you had to come up with an ulterior motive to do charity.
Mm.
So anything, any movement on that front?
I mean, there hasn't been any movement now.
Yeah. All right. We'll check in.
Good question, Tristan.
All right. That's it for today's show. We got three shows next week.
But Jack, if you do need a new dad, like, you know, we need an extra bedroom, but come on over.
He just shows up at your door with a little
with
suitcase.
With a pindle stick?
Yeah. Pindle stick. All right. We'll be back with three shows next week. Wes, you will be out of town on your honeymoon.
I will be.
On a beach somewhere.
Well deserved.
South of the border.
Beautiful. But we will have some guests sitting in the Wes chair, starting with old friend Lindsay Rhodes.
All
it's
right.
been a while since we had Lindsay here in the studio, so we're very excited. I'm sure there'll be some other surprises along the way. So that's it for today's show. Stan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Till Monday!
Put like your money where your mouth is.
I didn't know this existed until like the day after I got married.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't know that.
Remember? Oh, no. I forgot my manly band.
You could get it. Go get it. You might as well get another one.
Oh, no. I forgot my manly band.
Oh, no.